For the last few weeks, I have been trying to give some lessons of encouragement due to the current circumstances that not just us, but this whole world is in, dealing with the events of this pandemic and also the many difficulties that we've had in 2020. Someone was asking me this year, the other day, was I looking forward to the end of this year? And I gotta be really honest, I really am. I don't think there's been a year, the only year that I can remember that in my lifetime that I look more to come to an end was 1974. And that was for a lot of personal things that went on in my life that were very tragic and had a lot of repercussions that would follow me for the rest of my life. And I was really grateful to see that year come to an end. It's always good to turn a new page and to start fresh. And I hope in January that we can indeed do that. And one of the things that I have been stressing from this pulpit, and I have ever since this pandemic began, is that we don't allow this pandemic to last longer than it's going to. It's going to end. From everything that I've read and things that I've been listening to that I find some credibility in, the vaccines are on the way. It may even begin to be delivered this week. And so that's the only way we're really going to get beyond this, is to be able to protect those people who protect us and to those who are most vulnerable. And then we'll begin to see a change, and hopefully I often hear people talk about getting back to normalcy. Well, it's been so long since we've done that, I don't know what that is anymore. If you can believe it, if this lasts till March, we're going to be a year in dealing with this. And so it has been very trying. It has been very much disconcerting and also has interrupted our lives on many different levels, especially our families and people we love. In my case personally, I haven't been able to see my parents face to face and in the same room for 9 months. I haven't been able to see them because they're in nursing homes, which are very vulnerable, and they need to be protected. And I understand that. I understand that, and I appreciate that. My mother, she contracted it, and she survived it. I'm thankful for that. But there are many people in those facilities that didn't. Thousands that didn't. And so we need to count our blessings. Today's lesson is one that's not just something that can help us during this time, but I think it can help us in understanding who we are and who we serve. Please take your Bible out and turn to Psalms 27. I want to talk today for this morning and this evening about waiting on the Lord. It is indeed difficult for us to let things be turned over to someone else, to wait on the Lord and allow His plan for our lives to be done so that we can get on with our own lives. And we need to understand that we need to have total, unwavering trust in the Lord. In Psalms 27, in verse 14, the psalm says, "Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and He will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." What does it mean to wait on the Lord? How do we do that? How do we, as God's children, living in difficult times and dealing with adversity and dealing with uneasiness and trial, how do we learn to readily wait on the Lord? I hope that this lesson will give us some encouragement exactly how and why we should do that. We have to have faith in God because God, faith in God will free you from fear. Now again, sometimes there's a healthy dose of fear, and it's a good thing. But to be overwhelmed by it to where it paralyzes you, that's dangerous. And that can have a lot of repercussions. And so we need to have faith in God that He can deliver us from any difficulty, trial, or adversity. And He can deliver us from any enemy that we might have thrown at us or that we might have to deal with. And again, you might not look at the pandemic as an enemy, but it is an enemy. It's an enemy because it can destroy your faith in God. It can destroy your reliance upon God. It can destroy your confidence in God. And it has the ability to do that if you let it. If we allow it, it has the ability to weaken our resolve to live for God. It does have that ability, and for us to deny that it does is not being realistic. And so He can deliver us from any enemy that we might face, whether it's within or it's without. The Bible says in the first three verses of this psalm, it says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies and my foes, they stumbled and they fell. Though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise up against me, in this I will be confident. And notice, if the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? If you're on the Lord's side, all the externals, what difference do they make? In the final analysis, if we're with the Lord, and He is with us, and He watches over us, and He cares for us, whom should we fear? We should fear nothing, because God is greater than our fear, and God is greater than anything that can make us afraid. We can have confidence that God will deliver. But the key in this, the key to have faith in God and to trust God, is to allow God to draw near you. I don't think there's ever been a time in our lives, at least in my lives, that I've faced as a nation and as a people all over the world, that they don't need to draw near to God. I'm going to tell you, I don't care what the scientists come up with. I don't care what might happen in the future, that men need to have God. And it's been perplexing to me in this pandemic, especially in this country, where so many states have tried to keep men and women from being in the presence of God and worshiping God. When was there a time that He's not more needed? When is there a time that He needs to be more relevant in our lives than in the timing that we're facing? And yet, it's baffling to me how we can say the liquor stores are essential, gambling things are essential, selling pot, the marijuana in three or four states is considered essential business, but the church is not essential. In other words, God's not essential. God's not really necessary in times like this. I would deny that. I would deny that He should be on top of the list of being essential, because that gives men hope. That gives men confidence and strength that they'll endure, that they'll get through whatever adversity there is. If you would read and you would study about the rise and fall of great empires, one of the things that causes nations to be destroyed from without is to take God away from its people. Because taking God away gives the government and gives the power of being control over your lives, because you feel that you really don't have anything to stand against. And so if you destroy men's hope For God, you take God out of it, you have some way of gaining leverage over them. And so the key is that we, even if we were allowed to worship, that doesn't mean that we need to forget about God. We still need to draw near to God. Listen to verse 4 through 6. It says, "One thing I have desired from the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion, in the secret place of his tabernacle. He shall hide me. He shall set me upon a high rock, and there my head shall be lifted up above my enemies that are around me. Therefore I will sacrifice, I will offer sacrifices of joy in his tabernacle. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord." You know, we need to understand that one thing I hope and I pray about this pandemic today has been the first time since I've been here that those attending are less than those that are missing. Today we have 32 of our members who are not here. And we have 27 that are. This is the first time since I've been here where those are gone outnumber those who are here. And you know what? It can be discouraging. It can be alarming. And what I hope happens is when we do have the ability to all come back together, and one day we will have the ability to all come back here together without fear of this virus, I hope that we've really missed it. I hope it's something that we've learned to appreciate more than maybe we did before this ever happened. That could be a good result of this. If we learn the basic need of coming together and drawing strength from God and drawing strength from one another. You know what? There's a reason why God made this plan of the church and its assembling together. It's not just to do the things that we do to please the Lord, but it's also to provoke one another. It's to give strength to one another. And when that is taken away, that produces other problems. And so we need to draw near to God. And when we draw near to God, he'll draw near to us. Again, that's a decision that we have to make. God is there. He hasn't gone anywhere. He's where he's always been. He's on the throne. He's accessible. He has never left us. He's never turned his back on us. And he is where he's always been. And we need to trust him that he will see us through. Now, the other thing that we do when we have faith in God and it frees us from fear is that we pray for deliverance. God hears when men don't. You know, praying to God, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, praying to God may not change the external circumstances that we're having to deal with. But knowing that God's aware, and knowing that God hears my prayer, and that God's concerned about me, and he loves me, gives me great peace. It can give me great comfort that I can know that all is not lost, and that this is just a temporary inconvenience, and that I can look forward to when it will be better. And I trust God that that day will be sooner than later. In verses 7 through 10, it says, "Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy upon me and answer me. When you say, 'Seek my face,' my heart said to you, 'Your face, Lord, I will seek.' Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not leave me nor forsake me. O God of my salvation, when my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me. Your face I will seek." You know, God's ways deliver. God has never reneged on a promise. God has never turned his back on any of his children, under any circumstance, under any situation, under any adversity, there is never and never will be a time that God will ever turn his back about those who he loves and he cherishes. God's ways deliver. And God's ways deliver if we will put it into practice. God has tried to warn us that there would be times that we would have to lean on him, because that would be the only thing that we had to lean on. He warned us about that. In verse 11 and 12, it says, "Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a smooth path because of my enemies. Do not deliver me to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such breathe out violence. Teach me your way, O Lord." The way of the Lord is that we do all we can, and then we leave the rest to God. But you know what? That's just a very hard thing, unfortunately, for many people to do, to turn your burdens truly over to the Lord, to do all you can and then leave it alone. Because that's all any of us can do. We can do all the things that we're told to do to help others and to help ourselves, and that's all you can do. You can't do anything else. There's nothing else that you're going to be able to do. The rest you're going to have to trust God about. The rest you're just going to have to put your hand in his hand and let whatever comes. And you're going to have to accept it, and you're going to have to not let it overwhelm you. You know, we can make a bad situation worse. And we do that when we try to do too much. When we try not to depend on him like we should, and we try to get out of our realm about doing things that we don't have the capacity to do. I can't make the virus go away. If I did, it would have been gone a long time ago. If any of us had the ability to do that, we'd have done it. If our country had the ability to do that, if any country had the ability to do that, we would have done it a long time ago. We don't have that ability. That's something that is beyond our scope to be able to do that. And so we're going to have to trust somebody else that's greater than the virus. And there's only one thing greater than the virus, and that's God. There's nothing that's greater than God. God is the one who's supreme and who we should have confidence in. You see, faith in God, faith confidently waits on the Lord to deliver. We have to wait for the Lord to do things in his time. I would have lost heart unless I believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. I want you to notice the beginning of verse 13. Unless I believe that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living, he would have lost heart. You see, I don't think there's ever a situation where our greatest strength is not ourselves. Our greatest strength is in the Lord. In any situation, in this pandemic, in the civil unrest that we've seen, in when we have personal tragedy in our life, when we have personal difficulty, in any of those situations, our greatest strength is not us. Our greatest strength is the Lord. And we need to understand that, and we need to tune into that. And we need to turn to that in order to give us confidence and peace, and most of all, hope. What does it mean to wait? What does the Hebrew word mean, to wait? It means to hope in a thing that will be effective, and to wait steadily and patiently till it is effected. That means that we know it will get better, that we know that it will improve, but we have to patiently and steadfastly, we have to wait on the Lord. But you know what? We don't do that very well, because we're impatient people. We like things quickly. If it's dark in a room, we want to be able to flip a light and have the darkness go away. If I'm sick, I want to call the doctor. Give me a pill, and tomorrow I'll feel better. We want everything to be done quickly. But life has taught us, if it's taught us anything, that not everything can be done quickly. Not everything can be done as quick as we would like it to be done. Now, I'll be honest, when this began way back in at the end of February, I never assumed that come the beginning of December here next week, we're going to still be dealing with this. And if we're really honest, we're in a much better position now than we were at the end of February. Because we know more about it now. We know how to combat it now. And we have vaccines on the horizon. We're in a better place than we were 8 months ago. If we're honest and if we're being forthright, a lot of things that they were doing in the beginning to deal with this, they're not doing that today. Because they found out it doesn't work. Found out that it's not going to be profitable to do that. And so we've learned something along the way. But again, we need to wait on the Lord. Believe and obey God. Confidently trust that all the results to Him. Whatever happens, trust Him. That it will all come out to my benefit. No matter what happens. When you and I pray to God, we might think we know what we need. We might think we know what we want God to do for us. But if you pray to God, you have to trust God no matter what answer He gives you. If the answer is no. If the answer is not now. If the answer is not never. You have to trust God. You have to believe that God's in a better position to know what you and I need than we are. And you know what? That's just a hard sell for many people in our country because we think nobody knows more about what I need than me. But Christians need to have a different attitude about that. We need to believe and we need to obey God. Now, in Psalms 25, in verse 3, that one will not be disappointed if we obey God. Has God ever given us bad advice? Has God ever given us bad counsel? Has it ever been counterproductive to do whatever God told us to do in any given situation? Has it ever proved to be counterproductive? And the answer, that's no. That's the best advice you could get. That's the best counsel you'll ever receive. And it will never be in vain. It will never be counsel that didn't work out, that counsel that took you in the wrong direction. That's never going to happen. Because His counsel is sure. It's steadfast. It's reliable. It's something you can trust. Indeed, let one who waits on you not be ashamed. Let those be ashamed who deal treacherously without cause. Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait for you. We need to wait on the Lord. We need to trust Him without reservation, without burdening ourselves and overwhelming ourselves with needless worry, anxiety, and stress. And this pandemic has produced enough of that without us adding to the problem. In Proverbs 20, in verse 22, trust God to do to right wrongs. Do not say, I will recompense evil. Wait on the Lord, and He will save you. Now, there's a lot of things that God has instructed us to do in His Word that on the surface, we might not see the benefit in doing it. Let me give you one example. The Bible tells us to love our enemies, to pray for those that despitefully use you. Now, on the surface, why should I pray for my enemies? Why do I pray for somebody who wants to despitefully use me? But you know, if you later on, God's going to tell us why you should do that. In Romans chapter 12, in verse 17, God gives us insight to why that's a better course to pursue. It says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, now, remember the word therefore is drawing a conclusion. Since we're not to render evil for evil, since we are strived to live peaceably with all men, as much as lies within us, since those things are right and the honorable thing to do, and if we do them, what's the result? Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. How do you heap coals of fire on an enemy's head? By doing him good. Verse 21 says, do not overcome, be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I think I've told you this story, but I think it fits here to use it again. When I was in the military, we had supervisors, and then we had a superintendent. And the superintendent was the person who was over everything and who you would ultimately answer to other than your commander. And he had power over you. He could make your life really miserable if he wanted to. He had the ability to do that. And I had a superintendent when I was stationed in Indiana that his only thought was his career. And he would have sold his mother out if he'd put another stripe on his arm. He was just all about himself. And he didn't really care about the individual. He just looked at you as a means to an end. He really didn't have any personal desire to see if you were able to progress in your career. He didn't really care about that. He just cared about progressing his career. And so he was not very popular with the people. And he had over 35 people that worked for him, that worked under him. And he had supervisors that answered to him, and section supervisors, and I was one of those. And I'm a more people person. I'm worried about the individual. I want to get the mission done, but you can get the mission done and still care about the people. I've seen people do it. I know you can do it. And so I was more people-oriented. He was more mission-oriented. So we didn't really see eye to eye on anything. And we clashed a lot because there were times that he would be extreme and he'd be harsh to people when it was unnecessary. And he was just allowing his power to go to his head. But you know, there's nothing I could do about it because I'm under he's over me. I have the responsibility of following whatever he tells me to do, and I did. I didn't like it, but I had to do it. Well, there came this day in February where we had a rain, which is not uncommon, but after it rained about 2 inches, that night we had a freeze. And the next morning, we had an inch of ice everywhere. Not just on the road, every sidewalk. You couldn't walk down the sidewalk because it was nothing but a sheet of glass. And so when we came into work, you know, we had grass beside where we had to get up the stairs to go into this old building that we worked in. And I was out there, and I told people, don't walk in the grass and then get to the steps and hold on to the rail. And we put salt down, but it took some time to melt the ice. But don't walk on the sidewalk because you're going to fall if you do because it's unsafe. Well, about 10 minutes before everybody was supposed to be there, the boss came, and he had some books in his hand, and he wasn't paying attention. And what he did is he got out of his car, and the first thing he did, he parked right by that sidewalk, and the first thing he did is he stepped on that rock, and when he did, he went straight down, and he slid all the way to the step and hit his head on the step. I figured he'd knock him out. But he was just laying there for a few seconds, and everybody in the building is just bent over laughing. And God, nobody's going out to check on him. I said, what are you doing? He could have had a concussion and knocked him out. So I go out there, and I hold on to the air, and I walk down there, and I get to him, and he's kind of waking up. He's kind of dazed. And I said, son, Raptor, you all right? He goes, yeah, I think so. And I feel in the back of his head, he's got this great big bump on the back of his head. I mean, it's just, you can feel it, it's a knot. And I said, son, Raptor, we better take you to the emergency room. You may have a concussion. You better, he goes, no, I'll be all right. So we took him in to the building and tried to put some cold packs on it. And I could tell that he was kind of dazed. And I said, you're going to the hospital, whether you like it or not. You go, or I'm going to call him to come and get you. He said, well, if you want to take me out there. So I got him in the car and drove him over there and got him to get him, to make a long story short. He did have a concussion. He ended up being in the hospital for a day. But you know what? From that day to the day he left, he treated me different after that. And I got a special duty job that you had to be selected for. But to get the job, you had to be recommended by your superintendent. And you know what? Like I said, I wasn't on a really good basis with him. So they had to have somebody come. Somebody flew from another state. Matter of fact, I flew from Nevada. That's how I got in Las Vegas. He flew a captain, flew from Las Vegas. He had to do a personal interview with me, and he wanted to talk to all my supervisors, including my superintendent. And so he questions me for about 3 hours, and then when that's over, I have to bring my immediate supervisor in, and then I have to bring the superintendent. So I introduce him to the supervisor, and I go to walk out of the room and say, oh, no, you sit right here. So I sit there and he questioned my immediate supervisor about me, about what kind of job I did, how dependable I was, and all of that. And, you know, he gave me a good report, and that was good. But then he brought the superintendent in. Now, I'll be honest, I was really kind of worried about, because I said me and him didn't see eye to eye. But you know what? I got that job because of what he said. They asked him, the captain said, if you had a job and you had a supervisor, as a supervisor, you had to give it to one and you didn't have time to go back and check it and make sure it was done right and it was done on time. You got 6 supervisors here. Which one would you give it to? He said, well, that's easy. I'd give it to Keith. So you could have knocked me over. But you know when he walked out of that room, you know what that captain told me? He said, you got the job. I'm only going to go interview the other 2 people. What God says works. When you do it God's way, it will work out to your benefit. You just have to wait on the Lord. He knows that his advice is the best advice. Trust God to right wrongs. He will do that if you listen and if you'll take his advice. The Almighty God is inexhaustible, an inexhaustible source of strength and hope to his people. Who do you and I have that we could trust more, have more confidence in, and have more reliance in than God? Who would you put above God? I love this verse. It's in Isaiah 40, verse 29-31. Listen to what this verse says. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young man shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles, and they shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and they shall not be faint. That's a beautiful picture of trusting, unwavering, unashamed, to truly trust the inexhaustible source of the strength and the hope that God can give his people. Do you have that kind of trust and confidence in God? Do you rely on him that much to trust him, to believe in him without wavering, without doubt, and know that in the end, he'll take care of me? Do we have that much trust to wait on him? When we don't know what to do, and this is the last point this morning, when we don't know what to do, who do we turn to? Let me give you an illustration. The Israelites at the Red Sea. I want you to think about this for a moment. In Exodus chapter 13, God has now released them from Egyptian bondage. With the death of the firstborn, Pharaoh finally relents and lets them go, tells them to get out. But he also told Moses that the Egyptians will give you whatever you need and you won't go out empty-handed. They gave them whatever they wanted because they wanted them out because they were fearful that God was going to kill them too. And in chapter 14, Moses says, "Fear ye not. See the salvation of the Lord, speaking to the children of Israel that they go forward." Now, here's Israel, maybe over 2 million strong, and they're standing at the Red Sea. And the enemy is right behind them, in chariots of iron, with Pharaoh changing his mind, and he is dogging them to bring them back. And there's a pillar of fire between them and the Israelites. And the Jews are thinking about choosing new leaders and wishing they were back in Egypt because they had a brother there. Moses says, "Stand still and wait on the salvation of the Lord. The enemy that you see behind you, you will see no more." Moses said, "Fear not, stand still and see the salvation." And what did Moses do? Moses took his staff and held it up, and an east wind blew all night and separated the waters. And in the middle, there was dry ground. And God says, "Go forward." Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. What have they just seen in Egypt? They saw God dismantle and destroy the greatest power on earth in that day with 10 plagues. And now they're standing at the parted Red Sea. Now, what do they have to have to put the... They see that water. They see it on both sides. Whoever parted that water has the ability to bring it back together again. What's going to keep them from doing it? And remember, the Israelites were wondering. They were complaining. They were ready to go back to Egypt. What would prevent God from them getting out there in the middle and God punishing them because of their lack of faith and bringing them water back? Why didn't he pick them up and put them on the other side? He could have done that too. Why didn't he? Because they had to take a step of faith. They had to prove that they trusted him. Would you not have to have faith to put your foot on dry ground? That takes faith, wouldn't it? Because those waters are going to come back. How long can he keep them at bay? And why wouldn't he bring them back after we doubted him just a few moments ago, the day before when we were ready to go back to Egypt? But you know what? They all got in there. And they all crossed over. And you remember what Moses said? The enemy that you see today, you will never see him again. Because you know they went in there too. But they got in there and all of a sudden they figured it out. When things began to go against them, some of the soldiers said, the Lord is fighting for them. And they began to run. You know, when I was young, I saw the Ten Commandments with Charleston Heston. This was probably the greatest thing that I ever saw when those waters came back together again. I thought that was the greatest thing I ever saw until I went to Universal Studios in California and I saw how they did it. And then it wasn't so spectacular when I saw how they did it. But you know what? What must it have looked like when, if you were there? If you'd have been there on the shore and watched what the Lord did, would you have ever doubted him again? The water came back together and the Egyptians were destroyed. How long did they trust him? The next day, after they sing the song of Moses, the next day, they complain about having no water. You see, they really didn't trust him completely. They trusted him in the moment, but in the long run, they really didn't trust him. They really didn't believe in him. And isn't that sometimes how we are? We trust God in the moment. We trust God when we're in this moment, when we have this adversity, when we have this problem, and then we truly turn over to him because we know we can't do anything. We tried to do everything, and nothing's working, and then we're going to trust him, and we're going to turn it over to him. But what do we do when the moment passes? We do what Israel did. We go back to trusting ourselves. And so, which is it for you? Do you have unshakable, unwavering, total commitment and trust that in the final analysis, God will see me through any adversity, any difficulty, any trial, and I wait on him to get me to the other side? Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have that kind of faith and trust in God, then you need to have it. Because if you haven't learned it now, life's going to teach it to you. And it's better to learn it now than until you have to experience it. Wait on the Lord. Do what you can. Do what you have the ability to do, because God won't do what you and I have the ability to do. What we have the ability to do, God expects us to do. But there's part that you cannot do. There's part that I cannot do. And for that, I have to trust God. Do we truly wait on the Lord? Please take your song books, turn to page number 326. That will be the song of encouragement. If there's any here who need to make their lives right with God, if you need to ask us to have prayer with you and for you, we're here to do that. The Bible tells us that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And if we can help you in any way, we bid you come forward as together we stand and as we sing.